Welcome, everybody. It looks like we now have a quorum of the infrastructure, Utah Inland Port Infrastructure Loan Committee. Thanks to everybody for being here, committee members, members of the public. Appreciate you being here as we consider a loan for the Savage Company. And we welcome those who are also online joining us. We're grateful to have you with us today, too. For the meeting record, we note that the following committee members are attending in person. We have Kurt Slaw, Daniel Royal, and myself. Then on virtual online, we have Duncan Evans. And then we have, of course, the others who are joining us online and in person here. And we want to go through introductions unless we have questions later on for you. So our agenda today includes approval of the minutes from our last meeting and a review of one loan application. Let's begin the meeting then with approval of the minutes of April 16th, 2024. The minutes were distributed to board members and are posted online for the public. May I have a motion to approve the minutes from the Infrastructure Board Loan Approval Committee meeting of April 16, 2024? Thanks. Anyone makes that motion? Can we have a second?
Second.
The only option we have. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thanks, Duncan. So that makes that unanimous. All right, our next item on the agenda then is consideration of the loan approval for Savage Toilet Rail. So, Ariane, the committee will look to you now for review of the loan application before us today. Included, I have asked Ariane to address some questions for us, so we have those on the record, and we know that our committee has done its due diligence to protect the taxpayers of the state of Utah. Then following Ariane's presentation, we'll have discussion questions and a potential motion. So, Ariane, I'll turn the time over to you.
Try and get that in the right spot. Appreciate everybody coming out today. This is my first AIB Loan Committee meeting, so excited to be here with you.
Welcome. And,
thank you. I just have a quick slide on here to remind us of what our authority is here for the loan committee. We're looking at these infrastructure loans and trying to follow the statute and the way that it was prescribed for this loan fund. An infrastructure project is defined as a intermodal facility, sewer, electricity, roads, water systems, those type of things for furthering the port's mission. And as we look at the loan rate, we're looking at the bond rate and then adding the 0.5% on top of that, for the rate to be established. And then on the back end, these loans are going to be administered and serviced by state finance, the state division of finance. So the loan we're looking at today is for Savage, and it's for an expansion of a rail line in the Tooele County area. We're looking at a loan for $10 million, a 10-year loan with annual payments, and looking at today's rate with that 0.5% added is 3.45%. The repayment source will be company funds, and what the use of the funds is going to be for is reviving about 6 miles of abandoned rail line, and it crosses two of the project areas that we have in the port, both the 20 wells, and then the Tooele project area as well. It will also build about 5 miles of new track, and it'll make that connection through the Lakeview Business Park from the transload facility out in Burmester. So I just wanted to go through the questions that have been posed to the committee, or have been posed that I should be talking through here with the committee. One of the questions centers around how they were selected and what criteria was used. As far as applications for the project, we have numerous staff inside that are in the port that are working with these different areas and talking to various businesses and things. And when they bring a project forward, and particularly for a loan, it's really has to first cross that threshold of, does it meet our mission for the port? And this one being for rail in rural Utah, was very important to the port, and we wanted to bring this one forward. It's also a well-known operator here in Utah and has an established relationship. So as far as, you know, we don't necessarily have like a loan round and a competitive application. It's just as these loans come to us and we apply them to the mission, we determine that as kind of the first criteria before we'll even take it internally and have them submit the application to us. So once they submitted the application, we went through an internal underwriting process. We looked at their credit history. We ran a Dun & Bradstreet report that showed good payment history, high likelihood of continued viability. We also looked at the income from the facility that's being built and the pro forma analysis to show that it can cover the loan payments. And then the business has been around since 1946, and we have a high confidence in their ability as management and their ability to leverage private funds. There is not collateral being pledged in this particular loan. We do get a letter of credit directly from the bank to verify some of this information, and we also run some other types of reports with the state to make sure that they're not in unfair standing. When it comes to what recourse does the authority or the state have in the application, unable to pay the loan, differential could be used for repayment, but it will, you know, the intent is to repay it from the added business line here at Savage. And I think that also addresses the collateral question that we talked about before.
So we would take possession of. Pledging all of that, we get as collateral?
No, they're not pledging the land as collateral.
What are they pledging as collateral?
They're not pledging collateral. We're just looking at their repayment, the pro forma and the potential revenue that is going to be created from this project to analyze whether or not they'll be able to make that repayment from their resources.
In the event that they don't or they can't, what happens, I guess?
We would have to look to the differential, that tax differential that we are receiving.
But they would retain the land?
Yeah.
We wouldn't get them?
No.
Does that seem like, shouldn't we get that if we're giving them the loan? Some collateral? On it, like you can't repay the loan, should it get protection?
As far as I'm aware, there's been some of these loans done with collateral and other ones that haven't had collateral backing them.
No, it's a very good question, Kurt. And so what we'll look to on all of these is the first is a creditworthy tenant. And so the first is, do we feel like internal business operations within the company and revenue coming from the site are enough? We looked at this one, and I think it's fair to say our assessment is very strong credit tenant, a lot of credit worthiness. Should they fail, the first recourse we would have would be the entitlements within the contract. And so as a reminder, we actually don't have the contract between the port and the organization. It's the state finance. So the second backup would be the contractual entitlements within the contract, meaning that we could go after failure to pay. And so we would have relief under the existing agreement. At least the State Department of Finance would. Then the third would be tax differential. When we look at the risk of all of these, and the reason we've done them on some and not on others is just the credit worthiness. If we believe we've got somebody that's in a very, very good credit position, which Savage is, then we feel like it's not necessary to go to that kind of fourth level of assurance from the company. We have, when we felt like Tooele Valley was the one where we did use collateral, we felt like maybe the credit worthiness was not as strong as what Savage is, then we did require some collateral. In this case, going through underwriting where we felt like the first three levels were sufficient, we felt like that fourth level was not necessary. So we do have some protections within our, the state will have protections because it's not us, but the State Department of Finance will have those protections within their agreement. And if Kurt or anybody on the board does want to see those, we can get you prior agreements and drafts just so that you have it. You see the recapture abilities that those contracts give us.
Good question, follow up, Ben. Is there a threshold that you look at for credit worthiness to determine if they need that fourth level or not? Is there a number? Is there just, what does it look like?
Yes, and a lot of that is, I think, things that Ariane will be going through, so I don't know if I want to jump ahead to any ratios or anything that you've determined. We don't provide all of the business financials just for public documentation reasons. We try and provide enough to the board so that you guys have a good feel for their credit worthiness. Daniel, to your question, as we looked at this and as we looked at the ratios, we saw the amount of liquidity and other things. We felt like it was credit worthy.
Well, I'll just make a comment, hold it up over this, but if I went and to get a mortgage on my house and I said, I got a really great credit score, trust me, you don't have to take collateral of my house. They say, no, I'm not going to give you a mortgage. Like, obviously everybody knows that if you have great credit, the collateral never comes into play, right? But why not get it anyway? Like, why not make it part of the loan agreement? So, you know, going forward, I would expect no matter the creditworthiness of the client, we would protect the state by taking collateral. Because obviously if they're having a hard time repaying us or they don't want to repay us, it's because the development didn't go and there is no tax increment. So that isn't necessarily much of a protection because there's not going to be tax increment there. If they're having a hard time repaying us, it's because the development didn't go and nobody, you know, bought the infrastructure and there's nothing going on economically. If that happens, then obviously they're going to be fine and we're going to get the loan repaid. So that would just be my thought, is that going forward, I think we should always negotiate the collateral as part of the loan.
Duly noted. We will do that.
Okay. Ariane, maybe you could just walk us through, I don't know, is this something we can, this is just for us?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I provided just for the committee's sake, the financial statements of the, of Savage and they're not in the public documents, right. But okay. We did go, and so part of my analysis was looking at financial statements and ratios. And I think I had provided that previously. Did you want me to go over any of those specifically in this conversation?
No. Okay. I would just refer board members to it. And I mean, it's I get Kurt's point, and I hope that we can do that going forward. With Savage, it appears to be a large company, large international, I don't know, international or at least national presence with significant revenues. And so I guess nobody is completely risk-free, but I feel like they are probably about as safe as you can get. But I do totally get Kurt's point. I hope that we can
put that forward. And that was part of the conversation, but they wanted to move forward the application without collateral in this particular.
They wanted that?
Mm-hmm.
Did they state why they wanted that?
Not specifically.
I think that would be the follow-up question is, why would you not be willing, like, are you planning on defaulting on the loan or what?
We can turn it over to Savage to make a comment on that.
Go ahead and have a seat.
Good afternoon. Jared Larrabee with Savage. I'm Senior Vice President over Strategy, Marketing, and Sustainability with the company. First of all, thank you. We're excited to be doing this project here, particularly in Tooele. So one of the interesting things about RHEL in particular and a project like this is we are exactly what you laid out. It's infrastructure that allows other parties and other businesses to come to the table. So we're one of those connecting links and that provides a different mode of transportation and a different option to get out to the area other than trucks over the rail, over the roads constantly. And so providing that alternate mechanism. So the specific to the collateral question, this actually comes into in a large international company with multiple different obligations and covenants that we have, then this becomes a challenge for us of when we can put collateral up and when we can't tied to that. And that really was at play here. We obviously have no intention to default on something like this. We want to continue to be partners with the state. We've partnered on other things with the state. And if we don't pay something like this back, that destroys our partnership, our ability to do work. So separate from just general collateral, it impedes our ability to do business, not just with the state, but with banks and others if we don't repay loans. So this particular one, it really comes into those different covenants that we have with our complex financing underneath it that makes it challenging for us to do collateral on a project like this.
So have you committed this collateral to other loans then? Is that the problem?
We haven't duplicated, but we can't commit additional collateral with the different covenants that we had. And if we needed to go back and find more specific information, we can do that. I don't have all the details. I'm not the finance guy in our organization that can address all the specific details of that. But as we looked at our other covenants that we had and the different structures that we had and things, this was one where we were not able to, at the time when we reviewed it, were not just something we were able to commit to at that point in time. So, but again, certainly have no obligation or no intention of not repaying the loan or of not doing anything along the lines. We have portfolios of projects all around the country and some in other countries that we look at. And these mechanisms like this allow us to go forward with the projects and do them. Andy, part of the reason he's not here, he's down in Nevada looking at a project very similar where, but for some assistance in getting some of these done, we would move on to different projects and say, okay, we may not be able to do that one entirely. So this is one of those mechanisms that really helps us to be able to drive the product or drive a project forward. We have typically, and in particular with a rail project, we don't take ownership of the product that is being moved. We just facilitate that move back and forth and make sure that it happens and collect the revenue for helping to facilitate that move back and forth.
So you're not going to take ownership of the rail lines?
The rail lines we took ownership. Meaning the product that moves. So when we build a rail line.
That's all the people that are using it that pay you for that,
yes,
right?
Yeah. When we build a rail line, that helps facilitate, in this case, out of the Lakeview Business Park, it helps facilitate new customers coming into the Lakeview Business Park, but either wouldn't be able to build out there because they need rail access, or they would be using trucks for all their moves rather than rail. And right. So this really makes Tooele County and that Lakeview Business Park a more viable and a better place to locate businesses. It increases the value of the entire location for businesses that need rail access or that want that optionality to have rail.
Yeah. I would just add that we are the $10 million loan is not the full cost of the project. We're going to be putting in at least $15 million of our own capital to make this project happen. It's a complex project that we've invested over 5 years into getting off the ground and looking forward to running this railroad for generations to come. And to Jared's point, you know, other economic development tools, while they work really well for a lot of industries in the state, they just don't work well for rail infrastructure because we don't own the product that travels on our rail. So EdTIF, RedTIF, those tools just don't really dry. They're not a catalyst for economic development when it comes to rail. This, the infrastructure bank, the AIB is second to none in helping to really be a catalyst for this, this investment in the state.
Jared or Andy, I don't know if this is, who of you would be better answer this question. So I'll just throw it out there for either one of you. I imagine you've penciled out when I don't think you'll probably in the first 2 or 3 years, I doubt you're going to make enough profit to pay this off. So have you penciled out when you'd start expecting this project to be self-sufficient? And will you be paying back from your own funds before that works out?
Yeah, so I know we would be paying back from our own funds before that point. I believe we provided Ariana with a pro forma of, I don't have that in front of me right now, but we did provide kind of that pro forma analysis of how the payments would come back and when it would be profitable.
Yeah, my review showed it would be about year 4 before they would see that profitability from this particular area on the
program. Yeah, but to your question, we will be paying from other revenues, other profits we have within the company. Like was mentioned earlier, we're a pretty diverse company. We've got everything from infrastructure businesses to a large agriculture business, and this year acquired a midstream oil and gas company. And so with the scale comes the ability to shift funds around where needed to be able to pay loans back like this.
So, can I ask one more clarifying question?
Sure. If
you want to. Okay, so you said you got another $15 million that you're committing to the project. Is that Savage equity that you're committing, or you have other loans?
No, that's Savage equity.
Okay, so no other loans, right?
It's not that I'm aware of.
Well, that's one question I was going to ask. So last year, well, earlier this year in April, this Savage Transload Network in Tooele received a loan, $2.4 million over 10 years. Is that separate from this project?
Yes.
And it was mentioned, I know Andy just mentioned that you'll be using revenues from other projects on this one. Does that include that Tooele transloading facility as well?
So all of our, we don't look at it as an individual project. It's the bucket of financing, and the way we look at all of our financing is the different mechanisms. So we do have other loans or other debt generally in the company, but it isn't that is specific to, so we're looking at the whole pie and how we allocate that pie in different ways. But revenue from the company is how we're repaying that, and we aren't committing a specific revenue stream to one project versus the other project.
And so that one in Tooele, how's it going?
My name is Armando Girado. I'm the Vice President and Business Unit Leader over our rail operations here in the West. And so the Tooele expansion is actually going really well. It's going to be completed before the end of the year. We have all the rail installed, so we're actually ahead of schedule on that one. We're finishing some of the final track work in terms of some of the alignment of the track itself, and so that will be turned over as well as some of the utilities, fire suppression. And so we're very bullish on that, and we actually have a pretty sizable opportunity to start moving some of the aggregate out of the valley from there. And so working with one of our partner companies already in Tooele to pretty much fill up all of that capacity of that expansion. That would not have happened without, you know, expanding the facility.
And in a perfect world, we would have actually done all of the applications at one time. We have been working diligently with the Surface Transportation Board to get approval, and it takes time with the federal government. That does not move at the pace of business like the state of Utah does. And so we've been working for years to get the approval to build this railroad, which we're excited about, because I don't know if you guys saw in the packet, this is the first new railroad to be built in the U.S. in over 80 years, and the first new railroad to be built in Utah in over 110 years. It's not something that's done every day. We're making history with it, but we would have liked to have actually applied for all of these together at one time. We just didn't have all the final federal approvals.
Great.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, no, that's very encouraging that you're doing so well with the other leg of this project, and that sounds like you've got already clients willing to come in and pay for enough to make that cash flow for you and the infrastructure that you put in there, right?
So correct. Is that, okay. Correct. And the the Lakeview Business Park was actually kind of waiting to see, would we get through the final Surface Transportation Board approvals? As soon as we got through those, we actually have three customers already identified that are going to open within the branch. So from already have, like I said, three solid customers lined up, and obviously we'll continue to grow that just in the last couple of months. Okay. So since approval was given.
That's awesome. Great. Thank you.
And we're working with the state to encourage them as they're looking, working with site selectors to have, to see the Lakeview Business Park as being a great location because it's going to be a rail serve location. And so we're trying to help the broader economic development community focus their efforts on that area and know that it is a tool in the toolkit of site selectors.
Perfect. Great. Just one last thing. So can you confirm to me, you know, after this meeting or whatever, send an email to Ben or to Ariane and just confirm that the collateral in this location that we're loaning on is not committed to another debt holder? Can you just do that?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Thank you. That's my only question.
Maybe I could follow up with one last question too. So on this project we're looking at today, as opposed to the previous Tooele project, describe your customers. I mean, don't tell us their names, but is it anybody or is it somebody who contracts with you? How are you,
yeah.
What would your business be on this?
So there are two very different business models between the two different locations. And so the Tooele terminal that's existing today, in the Army Depot, in the Peterson's Industrial Depot, that is a multi-commodity hazardous material transload facility. And so we do a multitude of products. I would say the vast majority go to support the mining industry. So we actually support 11 different mines out of that facility, as well as, so we're doing some of the, so what you're seeing there is, you know, various types of products like liquid ammonium nitrate, prill, so like sulfur products for solution mining for everything from, you know, like what we see here on the east side of the valley to Nevada to everywhere else. We also see food grade products at that facility. We see fuels. And so we contract with a very large, fuel retailer here that, located in Utah, to direct distribute fuels if there's ebbs in the market, just various different types of products that we're permitted for at that facility. The Savage Tooele Railroad, so what this application is for, is going to be a short line railroad to bring rail cars directly into industry. And so those facilities will be large manufacturing, those type of facilities, cold storage, that we're going to be bringing rail cars directly inside their facilities. And so these are very different type of market for the two different facilities of what they have. So in terms of the Savage transload, that's our facility, our asset that we're then taking that last mile in trucking. And the industrial park that we're building is going to be direct rail serviced into actual warehouses, those type of facilities. So the trucking component will likely not be there.
And under Savage Tooele Railroad, unlike the Tooele transload, we'll have a common carrier obligation. So in addition to those businesses that will be built at the business park, we have our rates offered publicly, and we'll work with those that want to have their goods carried on our railroad.
I'm sure Ariane will tell us, if not, remind me to ask how many trucks this is projected to take off the road, all those environmental things that
sure.
The service has
to pay for. Happy to answer that. So right now we're predicting kind of in years 1 through 3, about 90 to 100 trucks per day off the road. So there's 3.5 trucks in every single rail car. We're projecting somewhere in the 20 to 30 rail car per day range. And it really just depends on how the park does from an infrastructure perspective. We're just kind of basing that volume off of committed customers and what we're seeing even in first kind of what we've landed. Obviously, as that expands, and that's obviously what Inland Port's hope is to continue to expand rail service throughout the valley. In the Tooele Valley, so every single time we bring a rail car in, that's 3.5 trucks off the road.
Excellent. Okay. And one last question. I'm sorry. Just to make sure another item that would help us feel this is an acceptable risk is your insurance. So you described some hazardous materials. Should something unfortunate happen with those hazardous materials, are you insured or do you have some kind of back up there
to talk to that.
Yes is the simple answer. Yes.
Okay.
We have multiple different insurance organizations that we work with from different types of risk. And then just speaking from the railroad policy, our shortline railroads carry their own insurance policies from a risk perspective, which we go out every year to the marketplace for. And so they carry additional insurance past the insurance tower of the parent organization.
Okay.
And as you can imagine, we're in it's a heavily regulated industry. We build not only to regulatory standards, but to industry standards and are audited on those standards in partnership with industry. We pride ourselves on, operating at in the safest manner possible. What's not just safe for our team members, but for the community and our customers.
And just to kind of further comment, to de-risk some of that, obviously, we've put the track into what class two standard is, essentially FRA. So it's all regulated by the Federal Railroad Administration. So 25 miles an hour is our maximum speed limit that we're going to be operating on the line, versus like what you see on, you know, the main line between the Pacific could be upwards of 70 miles per hour. And so there's a few reasons for doing that, but that will also de-risk, significantly de-risk the potential of a catastrophic injury.
Another quick question. Have you all worked with Grantsville City, Tooele County on this? What kind of support are they offering? And then a follow-up question to that. Do you have any contracts in place? Are you negotiating with any companies currently on using that, whether that's companies currently there or companies looking to locate there?
Yeah. So Armando spoke to the contracts. We don't have any currently in place, but by announcing that we were going to do this by getting approval from the Surface Transportation Board, we have customers of Lakeview Business Park that are now wanting and coming to the facility that wouldn't come to it other if there was no rail. So that's in process and in place. This is a year to year and a half construction timeline. So there's still time before that happens. And at the same time, Lakeview Business Park is building out their facility in parallel to allow this to grow. What was the first question?
Yeah, have you worked with Tooele County and or Grantsville City? What kind of support are they offering?
Yeah, we've worked with all of the local entities there. We do have support. When we started the project, we got a number of those local officials there. There was actually a press release about 2 weeks ago related to that project with the governor there in support of the project and a number of the local elected officials there in support of the project as well.
Including the mayor of Grantsville was at our groundbreaking event. And so we work very closely with the elected officials there as well as the city of Erta. So city of Erta, Grantsville City, and Tooele City. I have regular interface with Mayor Wynn and Tooele just because of the current transload. And we've actually helped them land several businesses that come into the area. The last was Central State Steel was one of the ones that we worked in partnership with the city of Tooele to help land them for manufacturing. I believe they had 200 or 300 jobs that they're bringing with them with that.
Well, for the record, I live within the Erta, if you can call it city limits, right?
That's funny because I
at least city there is.
I live in Tooele, so you got two Tooele Valley people here.
Area? We met with the city of Erta at the Tooele.
Oh, wow. We're not biased in any ways.
Excellent. Thank you for your responses. Thanks for your questions. Ariane, I don't know if we've left anything uncovered, but please continue on.
I'll just continue through the questions that we want to address. We've been talking a little bit about that public impact and benefit. Mentioned, you know, about 5,000 commercial trucks annually being taken off the road in that first year of operation. They're looking at 4 to 5 full-time direct jobs that will come from this and 18 additional indirect and induced jobs across the rest of the economy from this project. As far as
Ariane, could I just mention, we try to be very conservative in our estimates. Honestly, the indirect piece, it's hard to quantify it because there are going to be businesses that'll be there that would not have been there if it wasn't a rail served business park, but we just don't want to make outlandish claims. So just wanted to throw that out there.
So as long as the direct jobs, I that's probably the one that you can feel most comfortable with saying. You said 4 to 5, correct?
Yeah, 4 to 5 direct jobs. As far as ownership rights, we will not have ownership rights of the project, but there is public benefit. And we've talked about that previously when it comes to this, making this connection and bringing in more jobs and taking trucks off the road in the area. The next question kind of gets to the but for, you know, would this loan likely not occur in the current market or would it have been different scale? My answer to that is that it may have occurred, but maybe not as favorable of terms as we're able to offer. And then, as Savage has mentioned, the capital would be potentially diverted elsewhere. And this project would not be coming to Utah, or maybe not as timely. So by giving this loan, we're allowing, this project to happen more quickly and bring this operation to Utah and bring these trucks off the road sooner here in the area.
Can I follow up on that area?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear from Savage in terms of how did the favorable loan impact your decision to prioritize the project or not?
To prioritize this project?
Yeah, because, I mean, Ariane said, yeah, you might have gone forward with this project even without the favorable loan or not.
Yeah, so it definitely helps to prioritize the project. I can use actually the example of our other Tooele expansion. I think it's safe to say that without that loan, there's a high likelihood that would not have happened and that expansion would not have happened. So
I would add to that. So as we look at, you know, as we looked at just timing of how long this process took, it took almost 5 years to get through the Surface Transportation Board environmental assessments and those. That significantly changed the cost of doing this project because of the rising prices of steel, and which is the largest thing we have to purchase is the rail itself, as well as ties, construction costs. So that elevated during this. By being able to access the loan, I mean, I'm involved in all the pro forma meetings. I mean, that essentially kept this competitive with other projects, competing projects that we had in the organization, like on the renewables front, those type of things elsewhere outside of the state of Utah.
Yeah, we've been having conversations with the Inland Port about this one for the last kind of year and some change, just knowing that the STB approval was just waiting to happen. And so it's completely shaped our discussions and our planning.
The one thing we've mentioned a number of times, 5-year process going through the Surface Transportation Board. And if you look at what happened with interest rates in that time frame and where we would have pro forma'd that to start with versus what the interest rates are now, it absolutely was an impact. And this definitely is something that helps us to go forward with the project.
Great. No, that's helpful. That's helpful. Are you guys subject to Build America, Buy America when it comes to putting steel in for this, or? Which is basically got to source the steel.
Yeah, no. I don't know the answer to that. So.
Oh, okay. Chances are you're not then, because if you are, you'd know. it significantly adds to the cost. So I was just curious if part of the stipulations of getting the federal.
Yeah, I don't think that's that's usually when it's like a federal grant or a federal loan. But we have to get federal approval to build this because they're federally regulated, and that's not part of the terms right now.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Just to address the last couple questions that we haven't touched on. We talked about the sustainability and market transportation. This provides more rail to the state. Hopefully less trucks. Not hopefully, it will provide less trucks and then more jobs in Tooele County, which have been something that we want to see. Are there any crime issues in the area and the location? The answer is no.
There's
kind of weeds and fields and things out there. And then are there any economic ties or other conflicts of interest between this applicant and the members of the Inland Port Authority Board and staff? And the answer is no. And I had our compliance specialist review the conflict of interest that we're required to disclose. So feel very confident in that.
Or any member of the board.
Right? Yes. Yes. She worked with Larry to look that up. Yep.
If I may just comment too on the crime one, this is really a good question. And it sounds like it's out of place a little bit. And on this one, it may not be fully in context. Because it is in a more rural location. There are several locations where I think the port has been involved with in the past where there are social justice, there's economic justice, there's environmental justice. There are significant concerns. So we really like this question. It may not be directly applicable to this application, but it's one we want to continue to ask just to make sure that we're doing right by the communities. In this case, we feel like the community is incredibly supportive, which may already be.
I can just add on the environmental question. Part of the reason the surface transportation review takes so long is because a full environmental assessment needs to be done. And that came back similar to what we've suggested, that it would not have an environmental impact and would actually have some benefits by taking trucks off the road and moving them to rail.
So this doesn't impact wetland areas or other...
That was all reviewed in the process and does not have an impact. Okay. That's
weird. There are some stipulations on construction of how we're having to construct the project to make sure that we're not impacting the wetlands, and that was part of the 800-plus page environmental assessment. We kind of joke a little bit that we got 80 pages for every mile that we're going to be building, but we are going to obviously build within the compliance of that, and so it's already taking that into account.
Right. So how long will it take to get all this constructed and you're in operation?
So we're hoping of Q1 of 2026 of resuming operations, and so it just really depends on material holdups, those type of things. Just to kind of see where we're at. I mean, I would hope we can move that timeline up, but it's just really going to be dependent on just material leads, those type of things.
And speaking of the materials, are you working with any Utah-based vendors, companies for any of the materials?
I don't know about specific materials, but we do work with our construction engineers, our contractors. They are all Utah-based.
The materials, they don't manufacture rail and railroad materials in the state of Utah currently today. And so actually some of that comes from overseas. Some of that comes from other locations, foundries back east. It just depends on kind of what's available in the market. But that's currently, to my knowledge, none of that's manufactured in the state of Utah today.
All right. Anything Great. Else, Sarah?
No, I think that covers the questions. Okay. Unless you have any other for me.
Board members, do you have anything else? Duncan, you okay?
I'm good. I think, everyone hit on the questions I was thinking of already.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I want to commend Ben and Ariane. Thanks for developing these questions ahead of time. I think this was a lot of the questions that we've had on kind of past applications, but it really makes it helpful that you guys addressed all of this stuff up front. So thanks for that.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, if I may say, Ariane's been with us for about a month. And in that month, she's handled our departure from the state of Utah and Finet and payroll systems and other things. She's doing an amazing job. So just a huge thank you to her.
Throwing it to the fire, huh?
Yeah.
Representative of Savage, is there anything further you would like to tell us that you feel we should know?
Just thank you for considering this and for taking this under consideration. We appreciate the Inland Port and all the work that we've done with them in the past. They're a great partner on this project, so thank you.
I have maybe one more before we make a motion. I know a motion's coming, but as I was looking through your cash flow statement, I noticed that in comparison with last year, the first 9 months of this year, obviously you're doing a lot of investing and financing activity, so that part all made sense. But up under operating activity, you went from a positive $200,000 to like negative 100 and something thousand. Can you explain what's happening operationally that's changed your cash flow to be that negative operationally?
There were some businesses previously that we purchased, that we sold, and so there was cash income from those. And then as
wouldn't that be we've invested in the investing and the financing?
Oh, excuse me.
Sections.
You're saying...
I'm looking at just the operating section. That's operating activities. Like I say, all of that other stuff. Like I understand.
Is below the line.
There's a lot of stuff going on that way. But
I don't actually have it in front of me right now. But I can probably afterwards. I can circle back with you and take.
Okay, I just want to make sure that you guys feel like you're not having operational issues that may come into play in terms of being able to deliver on this project.
Absolutely not. So I think we'll end up from last year growing more than 10%. So our growth from last year.
From an EBITDA perspective.
From an EBITDA perspective, which won't be reflected in what you're doing there.
Okay. All right. That's fine. That's good enough.
Okay, thank you. All right, I've drafted a potential motion. I don't know if I want to make that motion, but if a member of the board would like to make the motion, I guess it's on the screen. Or you can use mine, whichever. I might probably very similar.
Okay. I move that the Loan Approval Committee recommend the Utah Inland Port Authority approve an infrastructure loan from the Inland Port Authority Revolving Loan Fund of $10 million to Savage Twilla Rail, with terms of the loan being 10 years at 3.5% interest rate, payable in 10 annual payments. These are equal payments, right? 10 equal annual payments, is that right? Mm-hmm. And does it start the first year after the loan has been approved?
Yes.
There's no capitalized interest period?
Correct.
That's, okay.
That's my understanding as well.
And you guys are good with those terms? Those are the terms that you guys agreed to?
Yes.
And just to clarify, I wasn't sure if you said 3.45 or 3.5, but it was 3.45.
So. Oh, did I say 3.5?
I wasn't sure. I didn't hear it very 3.45.
Well. Yeah. Okay. 3.45.
Just so it's on the record, it's clear.
Is the interest rate, and I looked up our benchmark rate, and that's right in the ballpark of state's funds plus 0.5% as required by statute. So.
Okay. Ariane, would you mind just walking us through a roll call vote on that?
Yes. Steve?
Aye.
Or yes. I'm not sure we get a
second. Oh, we need a second.
I'll second it.
Steve?
Yes.
Duncan?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Very well. Thank you. That vote is unanimous then. And so that this will now go to the Inport Board for their further consideration. And if they approve it, then it'll get executed and Division of Finance will execute the contract and it'll get reported to the Executive Appropriations Committee.
Oh, yes. Like I said, we have to come back to EAC.
Yeah, I'll go to the Executive Appropriations Committee, which meets again in January. So, they'll be repeatedly with the upcoming session coming up. So there's plenty of opportunities there. So that's all. Thank you, members and Savage Rose member being
thank
here.
You. Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, great, thank you.
We can take one more vote to adjourn. Or one more motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn.
Okay. I don't think we need a second on that, so we'll just say we are adjourned.
Nope. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, great members.